Good evening, Source Nation. Welcome to Stay Woke with James Robinson. I am host James Robinson. Tonight's subject will be white settler politics and national extremism. But before I go any further, let me thank our sponsor, the Fisher Projects, Tiffany Fisher, Chief Executive Officer of the Fisher Projects, is changing lives and making things happen in her community. To learn more about this amazing organization, go to www.thefisherprojects.org. That is www.thefisherprojects.com. So again, Source Nation, as I stated earlier, tonight we'll be briefly discussing white settler politics and what that means to the country as a whole. And I'm going to get a little bit into the history of it. I'm looking at what's going on in the national news and the media and all that. I've been following the terrorist attacks, just like I'm pretty sure everyone else has been, and looking at that. I think we've got 250 plus now mass terrorist attacks by domestic terrorists here in the United States this year alone. And, you know, people are saying, oh, it's video games and it's the president's rhetoric and all these other different things. But I'm here to, you know, go ahead and give you some of the history behind these things and how they've evolved over the last 150 years of American history. And when I say 150 years of American history, we're going to go over this very briefly. Again, I'm not going to have y'all here all night. We might have a 30-minute show tonight, so I'm not trying to do a lot. But I do want to go over the importance of understanding what it is, what's going on right now. It's one thing to say that Donald Trump and his administration is racist, or that he has bigoted views and it gives light to, or gives a gaslight to other people to go ahead and express their racist views. That's one thing. But it's a wholly entirely different thing, because I've been saying these things, and it's a wholly different thing to try to point out some of the structural things that he represents that will survive past his presidency. And that is very important to understand as we look forward to 2020 and beyond. Because at the end of the day, you can take the man out of office, but all the people that got him elected are not going anywhere. They may feel even more motivated to try to speak on their what they feel unheard voices. And the interesting thing about it is, when you look at American history, or just history, world history writ large, anytime people divide people, anytime there's a demagogue or a leader that divides people based on their differences, what you'll find is that the people that they're dividing from one another are the people that should have unity. And now I'm not trying to get on here and say that I'm trying to figure out how to say it is the best way to say it. Long story short, I'm not trying to get on here and say that black people and white people have common interests. But that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's not us. It's not black people. I'm sorry. I don't know if y'all know this, but I'm a black man in America. So that's the perspective in which I'm speaking from. It's never black people who look at white people and say to ourselves, let's go ahead and try to oppress and put them on the bottom of some type of social hierarchy. But usually what happens is, if you look at American history and you look back, let's go back 150 years. Let's go back to the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, and up until the 1920s. What you'll find is there was a large, they called it anti-Catholic, anti-immigrant, bigoted, xenophobic period of American history. And that has not gone anywhere. So what you're talking about is the emergence of the Ku Klux Klan, the revival of the Ku Klux Klan, and all of this has a lot to do with national politics, especially when it comes to the office of the president. When you're looking at somebody like Andrew Jackson, who, and this is going back to even further than the 1860s and going back to the 1840s, 1820s, when you look at how he gained his notoriety by exterminating Native Americans and what they call annexing the state of Florida. So he basically instituted what they call the Trail of Tears, trying to get all these Native Americans and dispossessing them of their land. And the reason why that's important you're looking at a moment like now, 2019, when people say to go back to where you come from, they also say this. I want people to just kind of really, 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 really let this sink in. They also say this to Native Americans, go back to where you come from, because it's not about being Native or Indigenous or actually being from where you live. It's nothing to do with that. It's more so to telling all Black and Brown people to get out of this country. This is a white man's country. And that's the same as actually same exact rhetoric that was happening 150 years ago. And that's what it actually got somebody like an Andrew Jackson, who's on your $20 bill to this very day, to become a national hero, because he was the cowboy that killed all the Indians. And that would get reinforced again in the 1880s and with the rise of the cinematic or with cinema, with movies. One of the most biggest popular movies, and again, going back to the presidential cabinet, or going to presidential history, would be A Birth of a Nation. And the reason why that's important, when you get in the 1920s, you look at somebody like a Woodrow Wilson, and he's talking about the Birth of a Nation, which was responsible for the reemergence of the Klan, who looked and saw mulattoes and Black people as being the menace and rapists and criminals of the 1920s, really united poor whites against everybody else in this country. And that's exactly what you're looking at right now. So, maybe where everything I just said was very loaded, and I didn't really get into, I'm going to get into a little bit more about what that means for, going back 150 years, how when you look at someone like a Donald Trump, or you look at somebody like even a Joe Biden, let's not take him outside of this, because he's been on an interesting side of this debate, because if you've been watching and following the national politics, you'd have heard that the Democratic Party is actually the party of slavery, the party of segregationists, and the party that just said we're going to pander to Black people superficially, but we're not going to really try to give them any. We're going to give them a couple of nominal rights, like the rights to vote for us, but we're not going to really try to attack any of these structural issues that we're facing on a day-to-day basis. So I think that's interesting, because even when you look at a candidate like a Bernie Sanders, who is against reparations, he's against reparations because he represents, even though he's Jewish, he represents a long-standing faction of disgruntled liberal white Americans that see no need in looking at Black people as equal. And you can say that, and I can say that very comfortably, because when I think about his policies, they have this, and this is what the thing I hate about the liberals as opposed to the conservatives. Now, the conservatives, let me go ahead and just lay this straight out on the lines. The conservatives, like a Donald Trump or George Wallace, or again, I have to put them in the same breath, or even a George Bush, or either first or second, or Ronald Reagan, is that they're not going to offer you any type of relief except for oppression. They make no qualms about it. They say we're not going to give you nothing but a job, if you get a job, and you're going to have to work your way from the bottom up, which, you know, in some cases, if you look at the unemployment rate that we have now, it might seem like it's a better deal than what we got with under Obama. But when you look at it and you think about it abstractly, the only time that Black unemployment has been 100% was during slavery. And so what happens is you'll get a conservative that wants you to work, but they want you to work for free. So going back 150 years, looking at the passages of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, you'll realize that slavery never became illegal in this country. It became punishment for a crime. And that's how they would set up the criminal justice system for the next 150 years after that, up until the present. So even going back to the conservatives and the liberals, so again, I just wanted to make the difference that the conservatives will give you a quote-unquote job or a place in their society that they find appropriate, and the liberals will give you some sort of social welfare as opposed to justice. And I mean, when you're a Black person and you're smart and you're really thinking, there's a lot of us that don't vote, but when you're really thinking about what it means to affect the national politic, I encourage you to get out there and vote. Not because, oh, People will die, fought and die for you to vote Democrat or whatever the case may be. Because that's what we vote. For a lot of us, I'm not talking about all of us, but a lot of us vote for the Democrats, and that's okay. But again, I want y'all to get out there and try to think about what this means and not get caught up emotionally. And we're gonna give you straight facts. So when it comes down to the 1860s, what makes this important, and when it comes down to this particular presidential cycle, 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, 1890s. Let's go down. I'm going to go ahead and go. 1865 was the end, or 1863, I think, is the end of slavery. 1865, we get the establishment of the Freedmen's Bureau. And what that means is that black people had actually gotten from the federal government at the end of the Civil War. Well, we're not going to talk about black people. Because when you talk about black people in this country, you have to recognize and actually discuss the loss of humanity that goes along with that particular, whatever particular time period you're talking about. So even in this time period, black people were not treated as full human beings. We were treated as contraband, contraband in the sense that we were spoils of war. And so if the United States were to invade, let's say, another country, as it doesn't matter what country you say, I don't want to get into any specifics or anything like that, but if the United States were to invade another country, anything that the United States would gain in terms of resources, whether it be oil or gold or even the people that live there, can be deemed as contraband. And that's what black people in the South had been called at the end of the Civil War. So what the North sought to do was not, and this is something that we really need to discuss. Black people were seen as political tokens, rather, to be used either for or against the South, to either bolster or weaken the South, depending on the context. So black people were never freed because it was the right thing to do. If you go back and look at Lincoln and what he said that he never believed that black and white people were equal in terms of social standing or anything like that, or even in terms of humanity. But to cripple the South, we would go ahead and free all the quote-unquote slaves that were in states that were rebelling against the Union. That was done as a last-ditch effort, if you were to say, because the North was actually losing the war at one point, and they wanted to completely cripple the economic engine of the South and reinstate Northern industrial rule. That eventually becomes Jim Crow. Let me say that again, because I don't think a lot of black people understand that. I don't think a lot of Americans understand that. And this is why this is important. It's important for Americans to understand what American history is. Jim Crow, while it was got its, you know, most famous fighters and champions coming from the South, these are Northern rules that were instituted across the country in terms of segregation that started in the North. Again, spread throughout the country because it was all about Northern industrial power, consolidated, basically speaking, for the Union. They didn't want the South to get in bed with the British, get in bed with the French, to get in bed. They wanted the South to go through the industrial North so that way they could effectively establish a monopoly on black labor. And that happened for the next year. If we don't understand it that way, we get into this Gentile notion of history where the North was this utopia. Even now to this day, the North is all this great place. But segregation and the Jim Crow laws come from the North. They're not something that started in the South. They came to the South at the end of slavery because poor whites in the South had, especially when they realized their economic power base in terms of free black labor was beginning to diminish, they were upset and angry. And what that did was actually unite the country in a very interesting way back in the 1870s, 1890s, all the way up until 1920, where you had a lot of quote-unquote poor white Americans who were dissatisfied with their social standing in this country. So you would get, this is where the sender back, the go back to Africa, the especially when you come out in the 1870s and 1860s, go back to Africa, go back to where you come from. We don't want you here. This is a white man's country comes from. It goes back 150 years, going back to the end of what they call slavery. But again, slavery under another name gets reinstituted because they wanted to make this country. And this country, and when this country was founded, again, going back to white settler politics and what this means, this country was founded to be an oasis for a concept called whiteness. I didn't want to say an oasis for white people because it's not. It's never been that. But when you think about what it means to be quote-unquote white, America is what... That's how America gained this quote-unquote moral standing in the world, because it has, if you ask me, and this is not even if you ask me, if you look at it historically, it has always subjugated its black and brown populations and a variety of different ways to create what I call a paradise of whiteness. Now, this is not just happening to black people. Again, I mentioned the Trail of Tears. And again, I'm going to go to the indigenous side of things, and we're going to be talking about the subjugation of the Polynesians in Hawaii and how that relates to black people as well. Now, when you look at the Samoans, you look at the Polynesians in Hawaii, you're looking at a very proud people, you're looking at a very black people. They're brown and black, if you want to call them black. But they're not from Africa. They're not directly from Africa like we were. A lot of us were brought here. They were already established in Hawaii as their own kingdoms and their own sovereign nations. Now, the reason why, again, Hawaii didn't become a state until 1950 in Alaska in 1945 is because they didn't establish the type of hegemony that they sought to inflict on the main continental land. Mainland of the United States. So when you look at the Polynesians, and again, this becomes very interesting in black history. I think this is why I'm gonna sit down and really try to discuss this over the last 200, I said 150, so we might as well go back 200 years down. Actually, we're talking about the same time period. We're looking at 1895, and I'm thinking about a man named Booker T. Washington. Now, Booker T. Washington is important, and a lot of black people know his name because a lot of the schools in their cities and states and inner cities were named after Booker T. Washington. And the reason being is that he sought to get black people to accept these northern industrial segregationist rules, democratic rules, if you will, and so that we could accept segregation. Long story short, I don't want to overcomplicate this thing. So what that means for black people, and again, going back to the indigenous or the indigenous Native Americans, what that meant is that there was a particular type of education, right, that was founded specifically for brown and black people in Hawaii. When you're looking at that, you have to look at a white man named Samuel Chapman Armstrong, okay? He was actually a general, or the son of a general, I forget sometimes, but, you know, I think he was, might have been, I think he had some military rank himself, but he and his father were both famous. The family, the Armstrong family, was famous and infamous for subjugating and getting the black Polynesians, the brown, whatever, colored, whatever way you want to say it, Polynesians, to accept white domination, a white American specifically domination in the Pacific Ocean, in the Pacific realm, in the Polynesian Islands, in Hawaii, and what eventually becomes the Philippines and all these other different commonwealths that America has over there. So they got their wealth, they got their notoriety and their wealth by subjugating black people to work in, I keep saying black people, brown people to work in pineapple plantations in Hawaii. Now the reason why that's important, because he would take that same education, if you're going to call that, and open what they call Hampton Institute, Hampton University in Virginia. And that's a historically black college. So when you're looking at this in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, and he has a prominent student named Booker T. Washington who comes from Alabama, one of his, if not his most famous student, his student, I mean, his student Booker T. Washington becomes more or less the black face that espouses Armstrong's ideology for the white world, for the white industrial world to find palatable. So he goes in front of the Rockefellers, the Morgans, whomever else you want to say, even Henry Ford's at the time, the Carnegies, these different northern industrial capitalists, and was able to receive money from them because he was promoting segregation to black people in the South who were not having it for the most part. So, but the problem is, and this is where the thing becomes interesting, because there's a real fight for, again, and this remains to this very day, there was a real fight for education in this country, what it means for black people and what it means for the public. Again, you got somebody like a Booker T. Washington telling people to be separate but unequal, or equal if you want to call it that, but segregated in all five of parts of society. But, and again, I don't want to get into the history. I mean, I don't want to get into the specifics of what he said, but I do want to get into the general point. And what he did was he would take this northern industrial capitalist money and fund schools in the South, vocational schools that taught. And again, I can't be mad at the Booker T. Washington because he actually did a really good job. And was a lot of his ideology, even though he said to remain segregated, a lot of his, again, I'm not proponent. Again, I don't know how many people are going to listen to this, but again, my name is James, and I don't want people to think that I'm promoting to go a step back in American history. But a lot of what he said was true in terms of black people. If black people are going to have houses, then black people need to know how to lay bricks. So we're looking at a touch again. So he gets some of that northern industrial money, and he founds Tuskegee Institute in Tuskegee, Alabama, basically from the ground up. And at the time, Tuskegee was one of two, not two black universities, but one of two colleges and universities in the South that had its own electricity, period. So you're looking at a Booker T. Washington, that's because everything that they did in-house. If we're going to have, whatever it is, whatever industry that we seek to find ourselves in, that we need to know it from the ground up. And from that, you can build an economy. That is nothing wrong with that line of thinking. It's just that if you look at it, you look at it from the prism of 1895 when he's in Atlanta, giving this what they later call the Atlanta Compromise in terms of accepting segregation in order to get these couple coins to build these schools. He's telling black people, if we're going to accept segregation, then we might as well not only make the best out of it, we might as well build a bond community. So when you're talking about a lot, and now we're not even the people. I'm trying to discuss this history so that not only black people and brown people understand this, but if I have any white listeners, I need, this is important for you guys to go ahead and try to understand too. Booker T. Washington set the way for what they now call Jim Crow and segregation, because not only could you have a black school system now, because you have black educators, that was also a response to black people showing up to white colleges saying that we demand an education after the end of quote-unquote enslavement in the 1870s. So again, you're talking about a 25-year history after slavery, where black people just demanded rights as human beings that we thought that we deserved. Now, the response to that, again, that's why, again, I need the white people to listen into. White people sought to destroy and fight black people everywhere except for on the segregation front. So it represented what they call, again, a compromise. That's why if you look back at it now, a lot of black people now, a lot of black historians rather, refer to Booker T. Washington's 1895 speech as the Atlanta Compromise, because it represented a way in which the poor whites of the country would accept slow progress for the black community. Now, what happens is, concurrently with that, and around the turn of the century, there's an influx of European immigrants into the country. And the reason why these European immigrants are coming into the country is because these black people are demanding equal rights, and a point that I haven't made yet is that we represented a large power. I've said it before, but I'm going to say this again. We represented, again, a numerical advantage in the South. A lot of black people in the South had become, more black people in the South than whites in certain parts and in certain areas. So what the United States sought to do after the Civil War, and this is where a lot of people don't talk about this when it comes to the Civil War, it's not about slavery. It's not about freeing black people, about none of that. It is about slavery. But what happens was all these states out westward were trying to join what they call the American Union. And why that's important is because some of these states were based on what they call white settlers. So these are people leaving the northern industrial cities, the southern agricultural cities. They'll go out westward to expand espouse what they call an idea, what they call manifest destiny. Again, without the expulsion of the Native Americans from those lands, none of this would be possible. And of course, without the Louisiana Purchase, which was again responsible because black people in Haiti had fought the French so well that the French had to sell everything because they were losing their ass. But that's neither here nor there. Again, I don't cuss that much. Hopefully, sorry, Kathy. So we go Google past that. But what happens is, again, they're moving out. They're trying to expand westward with the notion of, okay, what ideology is going to carry westward? The Southern agricultural ideology or the Northern industrial ideology? Now, what happens is the marriage of that becomes Jim Crow. So while the Missouris of the world and Texas and Louisiana and all these other different states are becoming states, these different territories, rather, Oklahoma, are becoming states, it's important to note that a lot of these people that are moving there in terms of both black and white people are either fleeing persecution, religious persecution. Again, we're talking about white people now. We're talking about the Mormons in Utah. We're talking about different groups like the Polish. We're talking about different other groups that are fleeing persecution, either both in the United States or from abroad, right? Or we're talking about black and brown people. And that's where it becomes interesting, because a lot of this territory was Mexican at the time. Again, okay, before the 1860s, a lot of this was Mexican, or before the 1840s, rather. So again, this is newly, quote unquote, American, United States, you know, whatever way you want to call it, new land that had been acquired by the United States that needed settlement. So a lot of the poor whites that had already been disillusioned by the Yankees coming in and telling them what to do, right? So that's where you get this whole issue of states' rights versus federal rights, and you're not going to tell us what to do and all these other different things. I'm going to touch that a little bit of that in a second. So what happens is this ideology spreads westward in terms of the Jim Crow segregationists, which is the compromise between the South and the North. Okay, so again, let's talk about how that is important to this day. So when you look at the manifestos, or you look at the extreme students today, they're talking about making America great again. Some of them, and again, this is why this becomes important for us to know the history. Their ideology, their worldview is that of extreme hate and white terrorist, white domestic terrorism. The reason why that's important for us to understand is because that has not been displaced. It will not go anywhere. And again, I want to go ahead and try to explain that. That will not go anywhere on the other side of a Donald Trump. It doesn't matter who's elected. That is why a lot of his constituents, he's going to lose the popular vote. Everybody knows that. That's what happened the last time. He is not fighting to win the majority of the votes in America, because we do not truly have what they call a democracy. We have a representative public. Meaning, and there's a difference. Actually, when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, nowhere in it does it say democracy, but it does say republic, to the republic for which it stands. Now, the republic means that we elect officials and they give us, they make the laws and legislate the, you know, the land, the law of the land to interpret how their quote unquote constituents, seek to pass in whatever the case may be. Now, what happens is at this time period, you got two different things going on for black people. Pure straight out lynching over the right to vote at all, right to vote for anybody, whether that be Republicans or Democrat. And again, at that time period, most of us are actually Republicans because that was the party of Lincoln. That was the party of freedom for black people. And it was represented a hope for it. And the Democrats were the party of slavery, the Whigs, what they call it, the Know Nothing Party. That was another party altogether, which I've talked about, but I'm not going to really get into too much because I don't want to, you know, convolute the conversation. I just kind of want to stick to the bipartisan parties, the bipartisan system that we've already established and that we've grown familiar with in a lot of times. So again, you got the Democrats who represent segregationalists and slavery. Now, fast forward to a Joe Biden. Or Bill Clinton. Let's actually go back and take a step back and look at Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton is the governor of Arkansas, again, one of these states that eventually had to decide on what type of politic it was going to go with. Of course, it went to the white settler politic, which remains unspoken. That's the thing about it. They don't speak about it as white settler politics. They don't talk about it like that. The best term that a lot of us have to use is what we call racism. That's not exactly what this is. This country was founded to preserve whiteness. Okay. So when you get a Bill Clinton, who's quote unquote, and a lot of us thought of before Barack Obama, a lot of us would have said he was the first black president because his use of the saxophone rather, on the Arsenio Hall show going back to 1992. But right before he was the president-elect, there was a mentally ill black man named Ray Rector. Billy Ray Rector, who didn't understand, who was accused of killing a person, a white man, in Arkansas. Okay, this is Bill Clinton when he was the president-elect. So what Bill Clinton did was he electrocuted this man. Again, this man was slow, right? This man was not mentally able to commit a murder at all. And it was well documented and testified in court that was the case. That this, if somebody committed this murder, this man was not mentally competent enough to do it, to the point where this man was getting death penalty. Everybody knows, I don't know if everybody knows this, but I've known this. Once you get the death penalty, you get what they call a last meal. Okay. So the last meal is whatever you want to eat, whatever it is. And they give it to you and they set it all for you. Now what happens is this man was so mentally incompetent. He said he was going to say that they tried to give him his dessert, which he asked for, whatever he specifically asked for. He's like, you know what? The meal was so good. I'm going to save the dessert for later. Not recognizing that was going to be his last meal in the world. So he's actually electrocuted, I think, or he's set to death either by electrocution or lethal injection, either way, in Arkansas. And there was a large cry. Right. Again, Democratic Party representing segregationists and slavery. There's a large cry that Bill Clinton, who was the governor, could have completely pardoned the man. Go ahead and use his power as governor. Bill Clinton didn't want to be, quote unquote, be viewed as soft on crime. OK, so what that did was, again, going back to the criminals, the rapists. Going back to the 1920s, going back to Woodrow Wilson and the Birth of a Nation. These are very I'm using these presidential terms and things that these presidents have said about us to try to set the stage for how someone like a Donald Trump, how his ideology won't disappear either with his impeachment or him being indicted or whatever the case may be. None of that is going to happen. None of it. I need y'all to understand this, okay? Let's say Joe Biden is elected. Let's say Kamala Harris. Let's say somebody, one of these Democratic candidates is elected. Nothing will change for us in this country. Absolutely nothing will change. So we need to stop buying into that hope and faith and all that other bullshit. And I'm just have to be candid. This is what it is. Okay? So, none of that is going to change for black, brown, or even poor whites. We need to wake up. So, that's what this whole podcast is. Again, I don't podcast a lot, and maybe I need to be more consistent in it. But that's where we are right now. That's where we are as a nation. So, going back to Bill Clinton. Matter of fact, not only did he not use his pardon, he was there in the front row and made sure that mentally ill black man was executed. Right, I'm talking about right before his inauguration. Okay, so then when you get a Joe Biden in the 1994 crime bill passing that through Congress and through the Senate, and you get somebody like a Hillary Clinton talking about these super predators, we're not going to even talk about the history of Hillary Clinton and her views going back in the Democratic Party, going back to the 60s. We're not even going to discuss that, okay? That's not a topic for discussion tonight. We're going to talk about just getting the people who won the elections, who were actually elected as president, and their views and their and how their ideology shaped national discourse when it comes to race and when it comes to justice. And when it comes to now what they now call the criminal justice system, Bill Clinton then goes on to inaugurate. He goes on to institute the federal three strike rule, which has probably put more black and brown people in jail. Which is why why America, not even black and brown people, but why America writ large has the largest prison population in the entire world, and it's not even close. Okay, so going back to something else I said earlier, I don't know, again, we're only 30 minutes in, I'm not going to be here, I'm not going to keep you out here all night, but going back to the 13th Amendment that said that slavery should not become, should become abolished except for its punishment for a crime, and then you get, again, I want y'all to see the system and the way it's set up to make sure that we fail, okay? So you get quote unquote three chances, right? Three strike rule, where let's say you get found in possession of something or whatever the case may be, and you get X and Y Z charges, right? Then after a certain amount of after three quote unquote strikes, you then eligible for life in prison. So that becomes interesting. That becomes not even interesting. Becomes relevant. When you realize also on the other end of that, you also have to talk about the exploitation of black wealth. So when you're talking about a Tulsa, Oklahoma being burnt down to the ground, when you're talking about the Jim Crow and the Klan moving, I mean, we talk about the Klan moving through the South, getting people to black people to move out because they wanted to, quote unquote, this is the Klan now, to establish their and establish their quote unquote dominance and show off their quote unquote strength, and instituting what black people call the Great Migrations. Black historians call the Great Migrations of the 50s, 60s, the 30s, and whatever the case may be. Black people moving out of the South and into the industrial North, realizing that the conditions are not better, they're just different. So when we're leaving places like the South, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, moving to Chicago, New York, L.A., we're establishing, again, segregated communities that remain that way until today because the discourse hasn't changed and none of this is going to change. Why does this remain this way? That's because they realize the best way to keep us under control is to keep us segregated, to keep us separate. And that's what this president represents. Now, by this time, hopefully y'all have been inundated with at least a little bit of history about how we route to this moment. A little bit. I wish I had some feedback with some crowd. That's why, again, I'm not going to be here too long tonight. I'm going to let y'all go. But at the same time, if y'all wanted to get at me, you want to look at me on
Twitter or Instagram, you can follow me at KU. RTLEELOVE currently love on either Instagram or Twitter. That way you can try to follow me, or you can try to follow me again on the Stay Woke podcast that we're putting out on Facebook. But again, I just wanted to try to set the mood how you got here over the last 150 years. So, if you look at
Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or even I like Kamala Harris. She's more of the same. Okay, when you're looking at a Barack Obama, okay, you're looking at a George Bush or Jeb Bush, whatever the case may be, they all represent different slices of the same ideological pie. They're the same person, whether it be wrapped in a different set of circumstances that make their individual outlook seem different, but you have the illusion of choice, okay? Because the system is not going to change no matter who's in the seat. And that's what we don't understand, because whether Donald Trump is a bigot or racist, I think that remains unimportant, actually. Because what he represents is a racist American structure that won't change, that won't blow in the wind either way. It's going to get worse. Some of these bombings are not going to stop. They're not going to stop at all. As a matter of fact, they're going to get worse. That's what I think. We already had 250 mass terrorists, white people killing everybody. I'm sorry to say it like that, but we already had white people killing everybody 250 times this year. It's expected to get worse, y'all. Whether it be your church, your shoot, like none of that matters. And the difference between what happened now and what's happening now, what's happened then, is back in the day, on quote unquote, and this is where it becomes very interesting for me. Back in the 80s and 90s and the 70s and the 60s, all these white people were representatives of organizations, okay? And let me tell you why that's important. Organizations like the Skinheads, the Aryans, and KKK, and all these other different things. White supremacist nationalist organizations. They don't have to do that anymore. They can just call themselves Americans now. That's where it becomes interesting. Because back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you could prosecute the Ku Klux Klan chapter and sue them, sue the brakes off of them, even though they was already poor. Now they got to give you everything, okay? That can't happen no more if these quote-unquote lone wolves, again, peep the language now. That's why everything's in the language. These quote-unquote lone wolves who don't represent any particular segment of American society, quote-unquote, okay? These different people can't be, they're not, they don't, they don't represent, according to the national media, they're not representative of any particular organization. They're just white nationalists. They're just racist, or whatever the case may be. And they don't represent any particular organization. So that way you can't sue them and find them civilly liable and try to go after them in the courts. I think that's very interesting. I think that's very, very interesting. Because, of course, these people are... That's what they've always called the Klan. They've always called the Klan the Invisible Empire, the Invisible Army. And so to see that how they're operating now, they're telling you what they're doing. See, the thing is, we don't read history. We don't study history enough to understand how we find ourselves in this present moment. And everybody walks around with their, like they're a chicken with their heads cut off. So that way we don't understand, you know, how we can better understand and navigate the world in which we find ourselves in. And we live under a regime of fear. Whether the fear is used to divide or unite, it's still fearful. So, and then people are being fearful, then are being the most rational, logical selves. So that's what I think this is all about. This is all about getting us thrown off. It's all about saying, oh, Donald Trump is a racist, and this, that, and the third, vote for Joe Biden or whoever Democrat they're going to throw out there to say that's the hope for the next black, you know, for all black people. And that is, again, that's why I want to emphasize, none of this is going to change the national politics. None of this is going to change the discourse. Let's say we get gun control and all these other different things. That's not going to stop them from, that's not going to get us any closer to justice. That's just a talking point for them to distract us from our major joke, from our agendas and how we see the world. And so, again, I just wanted to get out on the podcast. And again, I don't do this enough. I wanted to do it now because it's an important time in American history. 250 mass terrorists, 250 white people, 250 times this year alone, white people have decided that black and brown people's lives were not worth to see the next day. 250. So how could I remain silent? How could I just sit home? I know I'm just sitting home. I always watch a lot of news, and I watch a lot of, I like to stay informed. So I just, again, I wanted to I actually want to wrap this up because I don't want to be here. I want to take care of your whole time. We're now somewhere around the 45-minute mark. So, I just want to thank y'all for anybody listening. Again, so if you take this moment, okay? Now look into some of the things I've been talking about and how all of these different things relate to this very day, okay? Don't take my word for it. Go ahead and look it up yourself. I implore people to try to get up and learn as much as they can about American history, because when you learn about American history, nothing that you see right now is going to surprise you, okay? So again, thank you for being a part of Stay Woke, and we look forward to having you back in the future. Again, but before I leave, I want to thank our sponsors again, the Fisher Projects over there at Tiffany Fishner over there, the chief executive officer of the Fisher Projects. Again, www.thefisherprojects.org. This is James Robinson. Y'all come in. We got some other shows with Reginald and Kathy. So if y'all have, I forgot this lady. She's a beautiful woman. I don't want to call her the sex doctor. But she's a doctor, and they talk about relationships and they talk about love a lot. So that's what we got over here at Source Nation. That's what we're all about. We're trying to make turn pain into purpose, and that's exactly what we need to try to. Again, as a race, as a whole, as human beings, that's what we need to be focused on. So I just wanted to give y'all a couple of notes. Go look up Andrew Jackson. Go look up a Booker T. Washington. Go look up his Atlanta Compromise. Go look up Samuel Chapman Armstrong. Go look up the founding of Tuskegee and Hampton and these northern industrial dollars. Go look up Jim Crow and how it actually started in the North. It didn't start in the South. It became infamous in the South because of the dogs. And because of the chains and all that other, the dogs and the chain gangs and the segregation and all that. But that started in the North. And that had been the status quo of the North before it had ever moved this way south. Okay? I think that's also another a major important point. Because when you look at somebody like Donald Trump, he starts in New York, right? That's where he steps on the political scene with the Central Park Five, right? That's where he first made his notoriety through the Central Park Five. The Exonerated Five, where he called for their death threats. Again, going back to the same time period now, because this is what makes it so interesting. We talk about four or five years later, Bill Clinton is elected and becomes the president and says the same exact thing. Bill Clinton, who y'all look and love and, oh man, Bill Clinton, Joe Biden, same thing. That's why, to me, I find it comical. So y'all go ahead and stay woke. I'm putting this out there so y'all can try to follow this. I don't know what this sounds like to y'all, but to me, I guess hopefully y'all don't get the warple over your eyes. You can probably try to look into what I'm trying to discuss. I sound so passionate. I hope that y'all try to understand where I'm coming from with it, because I don't want us to get tricked by the same crap. Like, come on, man. That's what gets me upset. How are you going to get fooled and tricked by the same stuff over and over? It's the same stuff. I'm trying not to cuss. The same stuff. Okay? Golly. Boy, y'all gonna get me cussing. So, let me go ahead and get up out of here. Y'all have a good night and a good evening. So, again, y'all remember to stay woke. This is James Robinson. Y'all, peace out.